Those who are Aryans strictly follow the Vedic principles, but in this age of Kelly community has sprung up known as the Art of Samaj, which is regular of the Concorda Liberators in the Brahma Paras. Their leaders decry all bona fide acharyas and oppose themselves to real followers of the principles. These acharyas do not follow the Vedic principles of the thing known as Arya Samajas or the Jains. Not only do they not follow the Vedic principles, but they have no relationship with Lord Buddha, imitating the behavior of Sumati and the descendants of Vrishabhadeva. Those who are Vaishnavas carefully avoid their company because they are ignorant of the path of the Vedas. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Vedasya Sarvara Eva Vedya, the real purpose of the Vedas is to understand me. This is an injunction of all Vedic literature. If one who does not know the greatness of Lord Krishna cannot be accepted as an Aryan. Lord Buddha, incarnation of Lord Krishna, adopted a particular means to propagate the philosophy of the Bhagavad Dharma. He preached almost exclusively among atheists. Atheists do not want God, and Lord Buddha therefore said there is no God. But he adopted the means to instruct his followers for the benefit. Therefore he preached in a duplicitous display the same there is no God. Nonetheless, he himself was an incarnation of God. Text 2 from Sumati, a son named Devatajit was born by the womb of his wife named Vrida Sena. Thereafter, in the womb of Asuri, the wife of Devatajit, a son named Devadumna was begotten. Devadumna begot in the womb of his wife, Denumati, a son named Parameshti. Parameshti begot a son named Pratiha in the womb of his wife, Subharchala. Text 4. King Pratiha personally propagated the principles of self-realization in this way. Not only was he purified, but he became a great devotee of the Supreme Person, Lord Vishnu, and directly realized him. Therefore, the word Anusasmara is very significant. God realization is not imaginary concocted. A devotee who is pure in the past realizes God as he is. Maharaj Pratiha did so, and with direct realization of Lord Vishnu, he propagated self-realization and became a preacher. A real preacher cannot be bogus. He must first of all realize Lord Vishnu as he is. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Ubuddha Janita Janam Janinanas Tapadarshana, one who has seen the truth can impart knowledge. The word Tapadarshi refers to one who has perfectly realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a person can become a guru and propagate Vaishnava philosophy all over the world. The paragon of bona fide preachers and gurus is King Pratiha. In the womb of his wife, Subharchala, Pratiha begot two sons named Pratiharta, Prastota, and Udgata. These three sons were soon very expert in performing Vedic rituals. Pratiharta begot two sons named Hajja and Bhuma in the womb of his wife named Stuti. In the womb of his wife, Rishi Kulia, King Bhuma, he got a son named Gita. And Gita's wife, Deva Kulia, a son named Prastava was born. Prastava got a son named Vibhu, who was the wife Niyutsa. In the womb of his wife, Rati, Vibhu got a son named Prithusena. Prithusena begot a son named Nakta, and the womb of his wife named Akuti. Nakta's wife was Druti, and from her womb, the great King Gaya was born. Gaya was very famous and pious. He was the best of sainted kings. Lord Vishnu and his expansions, who are meant to protect the universe, are always situated in the transcendental mode of goodness known as the Chuva Sampar. Being the direct expansion of Lord Vishnu, King Gaya is also situated in the Chuva Sampar. Because of this, Maharaj Gaya was fully equipped with transcendental knowledge. Therefore, it was called Mahapurusha. Apart from this verse, it appears that the incarnations of God are various. Some are part and parcel of direct expansion, some are direct expansion of Lord Vishnu. A direct incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God is called Amsa or Samsa, whereas an incarnation from Amsa is called a Kala. Among the Kalas, there are the Divinamsa Jivas, or living entities. These are counted among the Jiva Tattvas, those who come directly from Vishnu and Vishnu Tattva, and sometimes designated as Mahapurusha. Another name for Krishna is Mahapurusha, and a devotee sometimes called Mahapavroshika. Pavroshika. King Gaya gave full protection and security to the citizens so their personal property would not be disturbed by undesirable elements. He also saw there was sufficient food to feed all the citizens. He was sometimes distributing gifts to citizens to satisfy them. He would sometimes call meetings to satisfy the citizens with sweet words. He would also give them good instructions on how to become first-class citizens. Such were the characters of King Gaya's royal order. Besides all of these, King Gaya was a householder who strictly observed the rules and regulations of household life. He performed sacrifices to his amount of life, pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was called Mahapurusha because as a king he gave citizens all facilities. And as a householder executed all his duties so that at the end he became a strict devotee of the Supreme Lord. As a devotee, he was always ready to give respect to other devotees and to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. This is the Bhakti Yoga process. Due to all these transcendental activities, King Gaya was always free from the bodily conception. He was full in Brahman realization, consequently, he was always jubilant. He did not experience material application. Although he was perfect in all respects, he was not proud, nor was he anxious to rule the kingdom. Therefore, as Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, when he sends to earth, he has two types of business: to give protection to the faithful and deny any demons. Since the king is represented as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is sometimes called Naradeva, that is, the Lord as a human being. Void of making injunctions, he is worshipped as God on the material platform. As a representative of the Supreme Lord, the king has a duty to protect the citizens in a perfect way, so that they would not be anxious or fool for protection, and so that they would be jubilant. The king would supply everything for the benefit, and because of this, he would levy taxes. If the king or government otherwise levies taxes on the citizens, he becomes responsible for the sinful activities of the citizens. In Kali Yuga, monarchy is abolished because the kings themselves are subjected to the rules of Kali Yuga. It is understood from Ramayana that when Vibhishana became friends with Lord Ramchandra, he promised that if by chance or will he broke the laws of friendship with Lord Ramchandra, he would become a Brahmana or a king in Kali Yuga. In this age, as Vibhishana indicated, both Brahmanas and kings are in a wretched condition. Actually, there are no kings or Brahmanas in this age, and due to their absence, the whole world is in a chaotic condition and is obviously distressed. Compared to present standards, Maharaj Gaya was a true representative of the Lord Vishnu, therefore he is known as Mahapurusha. My dear Dhinaparisha, those who are very learned in the histories of the Puranas eulogize and glorify King Gaya with the following verses. Wherefore, the historical references to exalted kings serve as a good example for present rulers. Those who are ruling the world in the present moment should take lessons from King Gaya, King Yudhisthira, and King Prithu, and rule the citizens so they will be happy. Presently, the governments are levying taxes without improving the citizens in any cultural, religious, social, or political way. According to the Vedas, this is not recommended. The great King Gaya used to perform all kinds of Vedic rituals. He was highly intelligent, expert in studying all the Vedic literatures. He maintained the religious principles and possessed all kinds of opulences. He was a leader among gentlemen and a servant of the devotees. He was totally qualified. Plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, who could equal him in the performance of a gigantic ritualistic ceremonies? So, this chapter actually is more or less a genealogy from, of course, Priya Vrata's line. But we have here Rishabhadeva and Bharat, and that particular line coming out. So, Bharat had a son named Sumati, and then Sumati had a son, and then his son had a son, his dad had a son, and his son, etc. So it is tracing the genealogy. This is, of course, one of the purposes of Puranas, to be a historical account of the history. And history, of course, means many things, but it also means the line of kings. It doesn't deal with the histories of common people, rather prominent people. So the most prominent person is the king. So we'll find in Bhagavatam and other Puranas, we'll find these genealogies. Of course, we'll also find them in the Mahabharata, Ramayana, etc. And, of course, in other epics of the world, we'll find the same thing. We'll find genealogies. They trace the lineage of the great heroes. So this is one of the subjects of the Puranas, that is, to relate to different vamsas. And of course, we have another topic called the Manvantara, which talks about the Manvantaras. So usually in the Bhagavatam, Manvantara is started with a great king. And that king has descended throughout the cycle, 71 yuga cycles. And then the next Manvantara comes, and another king comes in power, and he starts the line. So each Manvantara starts the line of kings, and those are the first line is recited here, which starts with Swayambhuvamani, goes down to Priyavrata, and then finally to Rishabha and Bara, etc. Here we get Gaya also coming up in this same line. So all this is the first Manvantara in the day of Brahma, descending from Swayambhuvamani. So the history is recounted here. That's the history of the kings, because the kings are actually empowered by the Supreme Lord. Now it's mentioned here about the Kala, or the expansions of the Lord. And Prabhupada mentions, of course, we have direct avatars or expansions of the Lord called the Svamsa. Amsa, of course, means part. It doesn't mean a part in the sense that you take a part of a flower, because God cannot be divided up in that way. But the Lord expands himself into another form, which shows some of the qualities of God. So that is a Svamsa. Now, apart from that, then we do have Avesha avatars. Certain jivas are given powers by the Lord. So we have the Shakti Avesh avatars, such as Narada Muni and Kirtu, Kumaras, Parasara. So these are jivas who are empowered by the Supreme. And then, of course, we have less than that. We have other jivas who do not have an eternal position of empowerment, like Narada and the Kumars, etc. But temporarily, they are given some powers within this material world to perform certain functions. So they are called vibhutis of the Lord. So the devatas have certain powers given by the Lord. The sages, the rishis, are given certain powers. And Manu and his descendants, they're also given powers to rule over the citizens and enforce dharma. So they're called the Bhutis also. So in that sense, they're Kala, they're expansions of the Supreme Lord, because they have some of the Lord's powers. So this is all part of the Lord's plan. The Lord produces a material world for the jivas who want to enjoy. That was described in the previous chapter, the forest of material enjoyment, and the jiva is there, etc. And once we have the forest of material enjoyment, the Lord has lines of kings empowered to implement the dharma, to help the jivas get out of this forest of enjoyment and minimize the obstacles on their way. So though it is, the previous chapter described, the miseries of the material world, the Lord alleviates some of the problems by implementing the system through the kings. So we have a structure of Varnashram Dharma, and all its rules and regulations to help the jivas in the material world. And this way, though they do still suffer, the suffering is minimized. So there is some relief in this forest fire material existence. Within that system, of course, we get Artha Dharma Kama, and then we get Moksha. So jivas are satisfied, that is, their desires for enjoyment are satisfied to some degree, that is the kama, etc. But they also have to follow dharma to do that. And by following that dharma, gradually the kama lessens until they come to suffering. when they do so, then they can perceive the difference between body and soul, which is the whole purpose of this allegory in the previous chapter. And when they do so, then they can begin the process of liberation from the material world. So one process, of course, is jnana, another is yoga, and another is bhakti. So the system is laid out by the Lord in such a way that the jiva, who is trapped in the material world, can eventually, and he wants to enjoy, gets his enjoyment by following the rules of varnashram, and then finally progresses to a point where he can get out of the material world and stop the force of material enjoyment by these different processes of jnana, yoga, and bhakti. So that is all the Lord's mercy. So, to enforce the lower part, that is the karma yoga, varnashram part, then he empowers the kings. So, therefore, we find this whole history of kings, descendants of Swayambhuvamana, mentioned here, because they are agents of the Supreme Lord. Among them, Gaya was particularly noteworthy, and therefore there's a whole section here glorifying his activities. Of course, previously we had Vrishabhadeva, he was glorified, and then Bharat was glorified. So then the next prominent person we find is this King Gaya. So of course, he's not so prominent. Vrishabhadeva is also avatar of the Supreme Lord. Bharat is famous. Also, Gaya is somewhat famous. Maybe he's praised and mentioned in other scriptures as well, but not as prominent as Vrishabhadeva or Bharat or Prithu or anyone else in the line. Still, he is given some praise here. And he's called an expansion of the Supreme Lord. So he's an expansion in the sense that he has been given certain powers by the Supreme Lord, though he is a jiva. So, in this way, we have the particular expansions of the Lord who are fixed and they're eternal. That is, the avatar forms or svamsa forms, and then the Shaktivesh forms. So no one can become a Shaktivesh avatar. They're already fixed by the Supreme Lord with eternal positions like Narada and Kumara. So nobody can become the Kumaras. It's not a post. Yeah. So none of the forms of the Lord or the Shaktivesh avatars are posts. They are eternal positions. But these vibhutis, these are posts. The devatas are posts. The manus are posts. The sages are posts. So it's described how after each manu, when he's finished, a new manu comes in. A new set of devatas comes. A new set of sages comes. So 14 times in one day of Brahma, we get replacements here for the posts. So those who take up the posts are given powers by the Supreme Lord, so therefore they're called vibhutis. So the vibhutis are variable. Different persons take up those roles. And in that sense, we can say they are expansions of the Supreme Lord. But we have to distinguish them from those who have eternal positions, as the Shaktivesh avatars and the swamsa portions of the Lord Himself, like Vrishabhadeva and Brahma, etc. So, we should be careful to make that distinction when we talk about the Lord and His expansions, avatars, etc. There should be some clarity there. So, King Gaya is not mentioned as a direct avatar of the Lord, so he's not the Supreme Lord, nor is he a Shaktivesh avatar. So therefore he's in this other category of being a vibhuti, especially empowered person among the different kings who were jivas. So he was, of course, ruling very nicely, that's described. But the other thing is, of course, that he was also a great devotee of the Supreme Lord. And he was able to maintain all of the principles mentioned in the Vedas. He did all the sacrifices and all the rituals required by the king. He was also ideal in governing the people. In that way, he would protect them, support them, etc. So in this way, he fulfilled his functions very nicely. But we also know that beyond that, being a king, he should also be a devotee of the Lord. That is the most successful thing. So King Gaya was also a great devotee of the Supreme Lord. So it's described that he was interested in bhakti yoga, and he served the devotees of the Lord, etc. So that is even more important for him than simply being a king. So this way he was the best of the kings, because not only he did his dharma and his sacrifices properly, but he also showed by his example that everyone should be a devotee of the Lord. He was especially prominent because of his devotional attitude he had among all the kings. So, in this way, the whole chapter glorified Gaya and continued with the lineages, etc. And then after that, there's a whole section on the Bhumandala description, the geography of the universe, which is, of course, also a philosophical section. It's basically the places. So that functions something like the genealogies. It gives knowledge of certain aspects of the universe. So the population is there with the kings. Where do they reside? So therefore, where all the different living entities reside, all the human beings reside in the universe, is described in that section. Concerning Jambudvipa and the higher and lower planetary systems, etc. The whole purpose of that is to show that the Lord provides for all the jivas a living space. So the material world is for the jivas, but the jivas have to live and enjoy someplace. So he provides them appropriate places. And these places are different. There's different places for different qualities of people. So that is the basic concept behind that whole description, the description of the dynasties of the kings. So the kings rule over the citizens. And where are they? They're situated in these different places within Bhumandala. So all this is arranged by the Supreme Lord. One, because the jivas want to enjoy in the forest of enjoyment. And two, the kings are there to regulate them so they can get out of the material world. So simultaneously, the Lord provides satisfaction for the jivas who want to enjoy, and at the same time offers them a chance to get out by this whole system of kings, etc.
Jain, basically they talk about Mahavir now. Today they're celebrating Mahavir Jayanti. Mm-hmm. Is there a mention of Mahavir in Vishnu Bhagavatam?
I don't know whether they identify Mahavir with Rishabha or not, but I think they also, some connection with Rishabha did. He is one of the Tirthankaras or whatever, but whether it is Mahavir or not, I don't know. Probably here mentions Arya Samaj, but I think Arya Samaj is not the Jains, it's distinct, it's something else. There's a modern group that came out about 50 years ago or something like that. So they accept the Vedas. The Jains don't accept the Vedas at all. Arya Samaj people, they accept the Vedas, but they don't accept the Qurans. So I think it's a different group, but somehow it identifies in here as the same. Anyway, the Jains, this actually is taking place during Swayambhuva Mandvantara, which is historically long, long before our period of time. It's not more than thousands and thousands of years. It's millions and millions and millions of years. Because we're in the seventh Mandvantara now, and that's the first Mandvantara. Each is 71 yuga cycles of 4 billion years. So it's a long, long period of time when this particular Vrishabhadeva was alive. So whether the Jains are speaking of this person or not, I don't know. It's hard to say. It looks like he's pretty far back in history. Very ancient.
Kala and Vibhuti, what's the difference?
What's that?
Kala and Vibhuti.
Well, like in the first canto, it mentions Amsa and Kala in the Swayam Bhagavan verse. There are technical definitions of that in different places. And Amsa, of course, refers to Swamsa, which means he's directly the Lord. And then a Kala can refer to another form of the Lord who has manifestation of less powers than that form. So in other words, in terms of hierarchy, we'll put Swayam Bhagavan at top, then put the Swamsa forms next, and then of those Swamsa forms, some are called Kala that show less powers like that. So that's one way of designating them. Here in the Bhagavatam, the Kala also is identified here with Gaya. But, as I said, Gaya is not recognized as Swamsa form in any of the lists given by in Bhagavatam or the Lagavatamrita, which mentions all the different avatars of the Lord. So therefore, we have to take them as a Vibhuti. So the Vibhuti is not a fixed, empowered Shaktivesh avatar even. He's less than that. So these are all the Vibhutis of the Lord. They are Jivas who are given specific powers for a certain period of time. But in any case, the Kala refers to one who is doesn't show manifest as many powers as the Swamsa forms. It's a relevant term, of course, when we use these terms. We say expansion of the Lord of some sort. But then, of course, the Shaktivesh avatars are saying expansions of the Lord also, but technically they're not the Lord actually. So there's a distinction between Jivas and those who are actually the Lord. So those who are actually the Lord generally call Swamsa forms.
Devatas
are
Kalas? Devatas?
They're Vibhutis. Yeah, see, Kalas is a little vague term because they could go either way. It could be Supreme Lord, it could use it for Jivas also. So when we talk about Vibhuti, definitely those forms are the empowered Jivas who are temporary forms. Of course, in the 10th canto, or 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there we have also, that's called the Vibhuti Yoga chapter. So different objects are called Vibhutis of the Lord, like the Ganga or the Himalayas or whatever. Some of those, of course, are actually avatars of the Lord, generally they're either Jivas or whatever, and they're called Vibhutis also. There's a little bit of a mixture there, because even persons like Arjuna is called the Vibhuti of the Lord, who's in the Siddha or whatever. And then we have things like, the Makara is a Vibhuti of the Lord, or the lion is a species of the Vibhuti also. Right? So that's more of an extension. They're not actually empowered directly, but they simply represent the Lord by having some sort of powers. So that's a little bit different from the Vibhutis or the Devatas or the sages, etc.
But is that the reason why sometimes we see lions quite prominent in terms of Singhasan and all?
I don't know if it's for that reason, but the lions represent royalty. Well, anyway, the Simhasan means the throne with the lions on it, so that is why. So, of course, the Sima, of course, is an astrological sign that represents Kshatriya powers also, so maybe for that reason. We do have the idea of the lion attacking the elephant. Also has some maybe religious significance, because the elephant is representing Buddhism. The elephant represents Buddha, Buddhism. So the lion attacking the elephant also defeated Buddhism once in a
religious theories there also. But generally, I think the lion is a symbol of power, and it may be related to the Bodhi aspect, but even in the Western world, the same thing as there with the lion. The lion represents royalty and power, etc. So the same significance is there. So it's more or less a universal concept as well, not just in Bodhi.
வராங்களா அந்த